I'm Elena Hutchins Lyle.
And I'm Harvinder Vadva.
We're the hosts of Inappropriate Questions, and we're back with season 3.
With some fantastic guests, we break down questions like,
is asking where are you from appropriate small talk?
Is it okay to ask a coworker how much do you make?
Should you ask a polyamorous person, do you get jealous?
Inappropriate Questions season 3. Available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Yeah, I think I was able to spend a little bit of time doing more sort of checking in. Mm-hmm. Tried to, every time I went to the bathroom, just stop and check and see how I was doing, which I didn't do every time, but the times that I did it, I think it helped me sort of regulate and check in a bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And what did you find when you were checking in? What was there?
Yeah, I think it just helped to sort of benchmark, come back to sort of a level headspace, check where I'm at versus calm and thoughtful approach if I was going off on any tangents.
Hi, I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. You're listening to a real-life therapy session between me and one of my clients we're calling Tom. When I think about Tom, what comes to the front of my mind is his honesty with me. Right from the beginning, he's told me the truth about everything in a way that actually made me want to be more honest and courageous in my life. It made me think about the times when I put my best foot forward, but maybe I actually just need to tell a person what's really going on for me. He's working so hard at this therapy thing. When he came in, he was experiencing depression, a lot of shame about himself. He was only sleeping a few hours a night and would often find himself yelling, having a knee-jerk response to something that was really intense without really thinking through it or understanding why that was happening. And we've been working since then on helping him slow down, take better care of himself, and get more in touch with some of the feelings that he's been having underneath all of those big reactions. Tom works in a traditionally masculine field, and not only is Tom taking time when he goes to the washroom just to check in with himself and regroup, but he's also making time on his lunch break to make sure that we can connect midday.
You mentioned that it would help you become more level and stay calm. What would you find when you would check in? What was there that perhaps needed to be leveled?
I think it just sort of get spiraling off on some ideas about things, or, you know, some interaction I had with the kids. You know, I have a tendency to sort of go off on my own storyline on things. So sort of stop and go back to what was said or what the fact was, and then just think of that and not spiral it out. And I found it's helped a lot with just sort of my interaction with the kids, because I sort of get on a huff and a tangent and get all bossy with them, and then realize, hey, wait, they're kids. They don't they don't get everything. So I get to recenter and realize that, you know, sometimes they do need to be told a million times. And that I shouldn't get overly frustrated with the fact that they're where they are.
Do you have a sense of what happens for you that gets you all in knots or spinning?
I feel like I just get hyper-focused on like the short-term feeling, and then I get sort of stuck in the like, oh, I'm an awful person, and why did I do that again? And then I sort of spiral in that realm. Rather than thinking through like, oh, well, I made a mistake. Like, sorry, I know that bugs you. I'll do better. I'll try better. You know, it's still hard sometimes to sort of move into that mindset, but trying to go there more often.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before, but I think about the extra challenges of parenting while you have an attention disorder. Like your brain has a really hard time remembering things that are not right in front of you, that aren't important in that specific moment for you. Like you mentioned, hyperfocus, that you really getting in the zone with something. It's super, super hard to be able to train your brain to remember all of those other things.
Yeah. And I find it goes in ebbs and flows because I'll forget things and then I'll remember that I can keep track with my notepad on my phone.
Right. Yeah.
And then things get better. And then as I sort of cross those things out and work through those, I sort of forget to add new things. And then it goes back to forgetting things.
When a person has ADHD, getting through life as an adult, including parenting and working in a job, can be so difficult. It can feel like if something's not right in front of you, you don't remember that it's a priority. That can mean forgetting about things that need to be done, tasks, even routines. It's really normal in situations where one partner has ADHD for the other partner to be really frustrated with the marriage. I know that Tom's wife had expressed lots of frustration with him because the things that were seemingly normal, the things that she could do effortlessly, seemed impossible for him.
Yeah. How do you feel about your ability to manage your attention right now?
I think it's still pretty stretched. It's helped a lot that they got a bunch more support at work.
Yeah.
I essentially took a time out last time. I stayed home a few days.
Yeah, I remember.
Called in and just said I'm not in a mental space to actually go and focus. Mm-hmm. So they've brought some additional support in, which has been helpful. Mm-hmm. But it's still sort of a three-way stretch of like trying to manage work, trying to make time for the kids. Well, I guess a four-way and make time four-way for myself.
That's right. Yeah. Those were the four areas that we'd left off with at our last appointment about where you wanted to focus and what felt like a priority for you. So I'm really curious to hear how things were. You had come up with a little plan for yourself about being able to spend time with them and giving the kids time to do more self-directed play. So I'm really curious to hear how things went.
Yeah, I think the past week it was pretty good with the kids. I tried to have them have more involvement in sort of the decision making for, you know, like we have to go outside, but here's a couple options for you guys to help me choose through rather than just like the comment I got from them was like, when you get home, you just tell us what to do all the time. And, you know, I remember that feeling when I was younger. So trying to still, you know, get the things done that need to get done, but giving them a little bit of involvement in the process and then having a little more one-on-one time with each of them. I think they really enjoy having direct energy rather than them always picking at each other.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right. Having all of that attention from their parents would be, like winning the lottery for a kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was good. And then I guess just earlier this week, I got a picture that was having some challenges and ended up like kicking a little hole in the wall.
Oh, wow.
And I was thinking like, oh, that's, you know, a lot of big emotions and energy. And I was talking to him and he was like, oh, I was just really frustrated. And it was like hard and I didn't know what to do. And I remembered what you did one time. And I was like, oh, I did that one time. Uh-oh. So I'm a bad example. So I talked through that with him and said, you know, I know when it feels like that, that you want to like punch or kick something, but like you got to redirect that and like figure out another way to work through that because it's definitely not helpful.
Mm-hmm. Oof.
Getting Tom an ADHD diagnosis was important for helping him get the treatment that he needed and for directing our work together in such a way that would give him way more strategies to deal with frustration, a temper, stress, and big emotions so that he wasn't hurting his home. Fast forward, and it's a few years later, and we're here in this moment, and he is seeing his kid with the same behavior. What's really important to note, though, is that he can respond to his kid based on all of the work that he's done in himself, slowing down, finding new ways to express frustration, stress, or tension, something he's worked really hard on. And because of that, he actually can gift some of those skills to his kid.
What was that like hearing him say that he learned that from you?
Well, it was very like monkey see, monkey do, kind of. And just there's lots of examples where I've not been a good example of, you know, proper emotional regulation. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but I think it's probably going to be a good discussion point for us when we get home to sort of talk through the challenges with that and how it's important to be able to go through that process and talk through that.
I'm surprised to hear you say that, because it seems like you have a history of beating yourself up about so much that to hear you describe it as a learning opportunity, almost that makes me kind of do like this double take, like, whoa, you sound really compassionate with yourself.
A little bit. Yeah. You know, it's hard to change the narrative in your head, but you know, even if it's 1 out of 10 times, it's still that much more than it was before.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to slow you down there, because I'm really so struck by the quality of how you're talking about this. Like even you did what you just said there, like if it happens once, that's more than it was before. I'm really struck by just the quality of your self-talk today.
Yeah. I feel like it's been, I don't know, since October, when I was talking with about things, it's sort of like challenging to move forward with things, but it's sort of like, all right, well, clearly how things were, the dialogue and the interactions and the way that I was responding to things wasn't working, and it was, you know, hurting people around me. So, you know, what's the point in continuing down that path?
Tom had a big wake-up call in the fall where he and his wife were having conversations about the things that weren't working between them. Some of the troubles that were happening between them came from the inability to actually be honest, the inability to talk about how they really felt about their marriage and what it was like for them. And so after that big conversation where they really kind of came clean about what they were each feeling, where there was a chance to talk about things honestly, things came to the surface for Tom. He was able to see more clearly the patterns of how he was moving through life and how that wasn't working for the people around him. And I think it really gave him the incentive to really dive deep into the work, to be even more honest with me and with himself, and to take a look at some of the things that maybe felt really uncomfortable to look at before.
It's scary going to new places and trying, like going out of my usual habit of, you know, conflict avoidance. But, you know, I get, you know, it's clearly shown not to be effective for even, you know, for myself or for those around me.
Yeah. So you have a high incentive to do something different, but it's still scary. What is some of the fear around doing it differently?
I guess just having to deal with harder conversations, because you never like to say like, yeah, I did that thing that really hurt you.
Why do you think that's hard?
I guess it's sort of acknowledgement that, you know, even though I was trying to do my best, that, you know, there was still negative impacts. I guess acknowledgement that the narrow focus that I had was not, well, that hurt somebody else. You know, it's not that I did it intentionally. I was trying to do what was best at the time, but. And I don't like the idea that, you know, things that I do hurt other people.
Hi there. This is Rohan Gunatilaka, host of the Meditative Story podcast. On Meditative Story, we combine the emotional pull of first-person storytelling with the immediate science-backed benefits of mindfulness practice. In each episode, you'll hear a different notable storyteller share a moment in their life where everything changed for them. Storytellers include psychologist Adam Grant, author Isabel Allende, actor Michael Imperioli, and more. The show is called Meditative Story. I hope you'll check it out and follow along in your favorite podcast player.
Early on in our session, it was clear that there was something that wasn't quite working because of the internet connection. So to preserve the quality of the audio, Tom shut off his video. So at this point, he can see me, but I can't see him. I can just hear his voice.
I'm curious because I can't see your face right now. I'm curious about what you're feeling. If you could let me in to what's happening on the inside in this moment.
I guess partly sad.
Yeah. Can you try and stay with that sadness and stay with me for a moment? Just letting ourselves make some space for that sadness between us here. I really want for you to be aware. I know you can see me and I can't see you, but really being aware that I'm here with you in this moment. And in this sadness right now, you're not alone. And I'd like for you to try to take that in. That the sadness can be there, but that I'm also there with you. Happening as you do that?
Feels a little lighter.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that, you know, it's not like a wave, but like that, you know, that's, there's a, how do I describe it?
I thought wave made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I guess it's like, I don't know. If you've ever been surfing and you're sort of waiting for the wave to come and then there's sort of a peak and then instead of it tumbling you over, you sort of go over the crest and then back down to a,
more of a
level.
Huh. I think that's the perfect analogy. That's how I think about feelings anyway. You did a really beautiful job staying with that, of riding that wave with me.
Yeah. I guess it's hard for me because I'm used to the seeing the magnitude of the wave and just sort of diving away, disappearing.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's stay with that for a moment. What is it like to ride it, to not just dive underneath it or to try to disappear or shove it down, get away from it, but to really go with it?
I think it helps just that there is a way to get through big things without just running away.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm hearing you say in there is that it almost in a way increases your confidence. Like you realize you can move towards it and you don't die. Like it doesn't completely take you over. And that somehow being able to have some confidence around being with feelings helps you stay with other people when they have theirs. Like I imagine your kids or, I mean, really anybody at work, at home.
Yeah.
You've had lots of experiences of sadness that have been so, so alone, where there hasn't been room to share in them with somebody else. So I'm really curious. I know this is not the first time we've done this together, but today, how did it feel to have me with you while you were riding that wave?
I don't know. It felt nice to have someone that was sort of empathetic to that and sort of was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna push you just a little bit. You said nice. It was nice. I know you've probably caught on to my my angles here with you, but you probably know I'm going to ask you to clarify a little bit more about what that means. Tell me a little bit about maybe the emotion or what it feels like on the inside when it's nice that I'm with you and I'm empathetic.
I guess I just don't feel alone.
Yeah.
I guess it feels like, you know, lighter. It helps feel lighter in my like sort of chest.
Yeah. Okay, let's see if we can go inside and just notice that openness that you're feeling on the inside there. And I'm going to be doing this in me at the same time. So we'll be doing it together. And I want you to see if you can find the edges of the openness, like tracing, seeing if you can really notice where the openness is and feel the boundary around it. And imagining that you could go in and just pull gently on the edges of that openness so that it begins to take up just a little bit more space in your chest. And maybe you can give that openness a color.
Yeah.
There are techniques like this in lots of different kinds of therapies. But what we're doing is we're asking an experience to hang around a little bit longer, creating some sort of metaphor or illustration for expanding it. It's just another way to help us stay with it a little bit longer, to lean into something that is good, that is right, that is healing. And instead of it totally taking over and, you know, eclipsing all of the other things on the inside of us, we're asking it to grow just a little bit. And we can see this technique used in other ways, where if we're asking sadness to tell us why we're sad, sometimes we can get overwhelmed. So we ask sadness to tell us just 5%, or just show us the edges of the sadness. But these are just techniques to approximate something, or to stay with it a little bit longer in a way that doesn't overwhelm us and helps us feel like we can be with what we want to be with.
I guess I feel the sadness has gone away. I guess it feels less alone.
Mm-hmm.
Feels more connected, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like I could have my jaw dropped this entire time, just being able to witness what's happening inside of you. It seems like it's so important that you are slowing down, that you're feeling, that you're letting me be with you in all of these feelings. You're doing such beautiful work right now.
Thanks.
Well, what happened for you when I said that?
I don't know. It's like, it feels nice when your work is sort of seen or recognized by other people.
Yeah, isn't that true? I think about this often in therapy, that when we are doing hard work, it happens in this container that you and I build together, but no one will ever know how hard you're working. And in fact, often when we're doing a really good job in therapy, nobody's really even noticing that out in the world, because we're correcting some of our challenging behavior. And so that goes away. It's not like there's anything new to show for it. It's just like the challenging stuff starts to slowly fade out. So it's so important that we take this time together to see your hard work, to see you, to see the stuff that's happening inside, that you know that it's real, that it happened, that it's not invisible.
Yeah.
And when you're in this place, what do you know to be true about who you are?
That I can change.
Mm-hmm. What else? Let's keep going.
That I matter.
Wow. That felt like a, oof, like it really hit me. Can you stay with that for a moment, what that felt like to say? I matter? What's happening for you?
Just feel sad.
Yeah.
In these moments where something significant happens, there can often be this experience of grief that we feel on our own behalf, realizing everything it cost us up until that moment to feel differently about ourselves. But I don't think of this sadness as a kind of thief of that moment of triumph, but rather a recognition feeling sad for how long he went without knowing that he mattered. I think that his knowing that he matters is becoming more and more secure inside of him. I think the breakthrough here is him being able to grieve that it took him so long to get here.
It seems like a kind of sadness that's a little bit different than the sadness that you were feeling earlier, almost like a kind of sadness for yourself. Does that feel right?
Yeah. It's not like self-pity, but it's just self, I don't know. That's that's a different realm of the feeling, right. But it's sort of a self-remorse, maybe. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, I think I know exactly what you mean.
Is there a name for that?
Well, there. I mean, it's not my word, but we call it mourning the self. Almost like there is this grief about how long you had to carry this pain for, and a caring acknowledgement of what that cost you.
Yeah, I think that's a better assessment or description.
Yeah, I'm just so moved by all the work you've done and how it would lead you to a place where you could know I matter. I mean, what is that? What happens for you when I tell you that I'm moved and wowed and proud?
I guess I feel happy. I feel, what's the word? Not justified, but like reinforced.
I like validated or...
Validated, yeah.
Yeah, reinforced is a great word. Wow, that's such an important feeling, a stabilizing, grounding, reassuring feeling to have. That I imagine makes it easier to go out into the world to say, I'm so sorry I hurt you. Or, wow, I need to do better and change my behavior to treat you the way that you deserve to be treated.
Yeah, I think it helps build some other tools for responding.
Yeah, to keep some of that defensiveness down in conflict.
Yeah, and I had a chat with her before I left and just realized that, you know, a lot of the sort of interactions we had, I was sort of being very defensive on it. So I caught myself and just told her, like, you know, I've noticed that I've not been responding very nicely to you. I've been very like defensive. If you ask a question, I'm sort of jumping to the extremes. Mm. So I apologize for it. And I could tell right away that it was sort of a de-escalate the situation a bit. Just because it's sort of, I wanted to go and be like, why are you getting on my case about all these things? But I you know, tried to go back to neutral and sort of assess and realize that I was sort of being very defensive on things. So I felt pretty happy about that. I think it was, well, I don't know how it was interpreted for her, but I felt less tension in our discussions.
Mm-hmm. What good modeling. And that also seems so significant for you to catch that, for you to see that in yourself and take responsibility. That feels like a really big deal.
Yeah. And I feel like that was a big sort of step for me to sort of pause and change course before starting to spiral.
Yeah. Really good work.
Yeah. Thanks.
Listening back to this session, I feel some of the emotion that came up in me right after it happened. We had to end our call, our time was over, but I remember writing my notes, my case notes for the session later that day, and feeling tears come to my eyes. I felt so, so in awe of him. I was feeling the sadness with him of how long he went in his life not knowing that he mattered. And just this heart full of gratitude that I get to be the one to do this work with him. There are some moments of being a therapist where it really feels hard, Right? I feel tired. I feel the heaviness. But then there are moments like this where I get to see somebody share their life with me, and I feel like the luckiest person in the whole world. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced by Jody Martinson, mixed by Will Howie. TK Matunda is our associate producer. Tanya Springer is our senior producer. Arif Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts. If you like this podcast, you might like The Dose with Dr. Brian Goldman. He takes us inside his world as a practicing physician. I so appreciate his insight and experience. Subscribe wherever you get Other People's Problems.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.